Welcome to the Navuna Sustainable Business Podcast, where we explore the real stories behind how small businesses in the UK are building sustainability into their everyday work. So over the last 18 months, we've been really fortunate and we've spoken to so many businesses from agriculture to retailers to manufacturing, construction, and even electric classic car company, which was fabulous. And today we're kind of stopping, I suppose, and looking at some of the lessons we've learned from these wonderful businesses that we've had the pleasure to meet. So what are the lessons? What are the challenges that they've come across when it comes to making their business sustainable? And also the lessons they've learned on this journey that they all have towards net zero. So I'm really fortunate to be joined by Jo Morris, Head of Insight at Navuna Business Finance. Welcome, Jo. So lovely to have you here
Thank
with us.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Absolutely. So you've worked with small businesses for many years now in your role, I suppose. So it'd be great to have your thoughts and insight on some of these wonderful businesses that, and what have we kind of learned from them, I suppose. But in terms of your role as Head of Insight, what are some of the things that you kind of enjoy the most out of your job, I suppose?
I just love learning about all the different things that businesses put in place to make themselves more successful. And it's not just about the bottom line.
No.
It's about all the great initiatives they have around the people, the culture, how they work, how they operate within the community, and all those items that just kind of come together and make them real businesses that are
makes
run by real
special.
People.
Yeah. And I suppose you know, one of the things we're looking at this time is some of the top tips, because of course, you know, we can only learn from those who've come before us, and those businesses who are at the coalface are those that we've listened to and learned from, I suppose. And one of the things that really hit me was a lot of the themes that were coming out were so different. And didn't matter what sector they were, but there was not one commonality, I suppose, that kind of bound them together, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. But one of the things I found fascinating was we spoke to Tim Everest from Grey Flannel. I mean, it's hugely successful, very creative, kind of, you know, create suits for things like the Bond movies and things. And one of the things that he said from the outset was, you know, listen to your customer. And it seems so obvious, doesn't it, at the start? But I suppose that sentiment is quite complicated because, of course, businesses and people sometimes don't work together sometimes. But that was one of the things with put them at the heart. So from your perspective, how important is it, I suppose, to get that balance right?
Well, it's really, I mean, certainly working from a Navuna perspective is really important for us because, you know, the customer's at the heart of everything we do. You can't run a successful business without concentrating on the customer and understanding what their needs are and what their requirements are. So I think seeing that reflected in the Grey Flannel enterprise is really interesting. So, I mean, one of the things that I know that they looked at was sourcing their materials so that they had a sustainable material. I think it was from fishing nets.
That's it.
And they do that because there's demand from their customer to be more sustainable, to look at those areas where they can tap into driving sustainability. And it's tough for people working in a city and working in that in a type of environment where they might need high-end tailoring to drive that sustainability agenda sometimes, because if their jobs aren't looking at it specifically, then they need to look at that in their personal life, and that's where somewhere like Grey Flannel comes in.
Yeah, and it's the opportunity, isn't it? Because what he was saying as well was that the younger generation, you know, they were looking for sustainable products at their core. So they would come to a Grey Flannel who you might perceive to be, you know, old tailoring company, and they've adapted their way. So it's all about being adaptable as well.
Yes, absolutely. So listen to the customer, adapt, and really change the business model so that you've got something that's sustainable for the future as well, because it's not just about producing something out of sustainable materials. It's about having that sustainable business model that has got the right finances in place, has got the right culture, and then uses that customer listening piece to really develop the products and services they need.
Yeah, you were talking about culture there. I found that really interesting. Because one of the other businesses we came across, Emerald Life, so an insurance business that's tailored specifically for, you know, LGBT communities and kind of minority groups, I suppose. And one of the things, their top tips was, you know, you have to embed the culture of sustainability right from the get-go. And I suppose as a small business, that's quite challenging, isn't it, at the start? So it's you really have to work at that.
Definitely. And that's where I think the leadership's really key. Mm. So when you've got leaders like Steve, who's looking at really embedding that sustainable culture, but also that understanding and that passion to drive change forward, and demonstrating that from the top, that's going to cascade down into the rest of the organisation. And it's going to be something that comes out in their values. It's going to be something that they can really live and breathe. So having that culture at the heart of the organisation and really being true to it, not just drives the business model, but it also drives the way that's delivered. And I think that's really key. Mm.
And I really liked the way that they were also thinking about the product. So incentivizing people through, you know, to be more green by the products that they sell.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. By providing insurance for green roofs and solar panels and things where you can actually look at the product itself and go, okay, it's sometimes a slightly more expensive choice going green. And that's something that we find at Navuna is, you know, to provide the right finance for a green product is really important because people might be choosing to spend a little bit more and to get that finance correctly is really key. But then if there are incentives and benefits to that in other areas of the market, like the insurance of it, then that's just going to drive that sustainability even further. Mm. And it's going to make it easier for businesses to make those choices. Mm. So I think, just attacking it from all different areas is really
so
important.
So smart, isn't it? The
really
way
clever.
That they do that, they're almost like teaching themselves their own roadmap. You know,
yes.
They're not waiting for government to give them advice. They're actually just doing it themselves.
And that's one of the things that we found as well, is that a lot of small businesses have been telling us that they'd really like a lot more guidance and direction and long-term direction from the government, not these U-turns that we've been seeing through different governments, different leaders. So that ultimately they can plan and they can address some of the green issues that they want to address and they're really keen on looking at, but they don't feel that they've got the support to do that in the short term because it costs them money. They don't have the big balance sheets necessarily that some of the big corporates do.
Yeah. And we were talking about supporting it in another one, actually, and it comes back to my next question, really. It's kind of support amongst peers and stuff and relationships with customers, you know, whether it's with Ray Flannel. But as part of that relationship is the supply chain, you know,
yes.
To build relationships, sustainable relationships with your supply chain as well. And I think this was one of the strong things that came out of Sea Change, which is the organic, you know, wine business. And Simon Rolfe there was very passionate about the fact that, you know, small businesses like Sea Change, who are quite small in the market, big in what they do, you know, almost leading ahead of this, of the kind of big corporates in terms of the supply chain. So almost like retraining and remapping the way that they do things. Mm. So in terms of the supply chain, that's key as well, isn't it?
And Sea Change is such an interesting business.
Isn't it? Fascinating.
Because they've literally turned something from a hobby into a proper business model. And that, I think, shows that they've got all the enthusiasm and the passion about it to start with. And as you say, they've looked at the supply chain from the bottles that they manufacture to reduce the amount of glass that they have and all the way back through the whole winemaking process and the labels that are made from grape skins. I mean, I think it's absolutely brilliant. Mm. And then to bring that to the wider market and really have that stamp of sustainability on all of their bottles is really, really good.
Yeah.
And you know, the sales have shown that it's obviously working because people really do want to make that difference. When you're out for a nice meal and you buy a bottle of wine that's got that impact or less of an impact on the environment over one that doesn't, I think it's really a nice feeling to have as well.
Yeah, and what I found was really interesting was that, you know, the founders of that business came from the larger drinks brand and they themselves, you know, I think they were in Canada, weren't they? And they'd say, well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we tie up with this ocean charity? Because why would we not? And it was that because they were small and they were agile, they could actually take that leap and go, well, absolutely. And everything they've done and stem from that point, which I think is so fascinating.
Absolutely. And it's giving back to that ocean charity as well, which is where it all stemmed from, which is the really lovely part.
Yeah.
So, beginning to end, really, which is
we
lovely.
Must try some of that wine at some point, as I keep saying to myself. I think that would be wonderful. But underpinning all this, I mean, you know, not all businesses see it in the product, do they? Sometimes sustainability comes, you know, as we were saying, through through Emerald Life, it comes through the culture, through the people that they have. And so some businesses, like Oxel, for example, it's all about investing in people, investing in the local community and providing jobs to people that live in community. So that's as important as you know, kind of a sea change who are changing, you know, the branding of their bottle, for example. So yeah. Do you come across that a lot in the businesses that you work with? You know, that strength of community?
Definitely, yes. And again, I think it's one of the things that's possibly not as visible either when we talk about sustainability, because it's not ticking one of those green boxes that you might have on a government agenda. But I think investing in the community and investing in the people that you work with is really, really vital. And yeah, particularly in Oxel, they look at that people development, providing roles. I mean, they work out of Oxford, so it's a local community. They're providing roles to local people that want to work in quite a specific space in cybersecurity, and they're investing in training, development, and making sure that those individuals have a really great career, who could then go and work somewhere else, but as they say, quite often come back to them because they love the ethos and the nature of the business.
Yeah, I think Mark was saying, you know, they're in it for the long term. It shows leadership and, you know, it shows its loyalty, isn't it? And it's just investing back into what they, I mean, it's just fantastic sustainability at its core, really, at its best, I think. So when it comes to Navoon, I mean, we were talking through another one of your colleagues who was talking about all the insight work that you do. Do you find that some of the issues that we've come across in the tips here actually come to life through that insight, through the business that you've come across?
Definitely, yes. And I think, as you said, there's a massive great spectrum of things. So not one business is focusing on the same issue or the same goal even in terms of reaching that sustainable business of the future. So I think what we've seen, and it's often reflected in the slightly larger corporations like Navoona, is that, you know, if you put all of these things together, then you're going to have a really, really strong business. So if we're looking at people and culture, we're looking at the supply chain, we're looking at how we can invest in our communities. And if we can find a little bit of all of that in one business, then that's really going to help create these sustainable businesses going forward.
Oh, that's fabulous, fabulous. And I'm just going to ask you, Joe, because I would love to have my little business one day. Maybe if you were to create your own little business, what would that be, do you think?
That's a really interesting question. And I don't know. I think, I mean, I love the idea of sea change because that's just all about wine. But I'm not sure if I've got the knowledge to be able to go into that. I think probably it's around focusing on the community. I'd love to do something that focuses on bringing education and business know-how to the community and help people just grow and thrive in their own small businesses.
Watch this space, as it were, with a glass of wine in hand. Thanks so much for your time, Joe.
Not at all.
And if you want to hear more, we'll be meeting more kind of small businesses in the future. Thanks so much for your time, Joe.